We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, bringing the hottest breaking stories from the Camp Nou. I'm Dan Hilton, as always, joined across the ocean by Francesc Tomàs, as you've formerly seen his work on ESPN or The Guardian, but now, of course, you know him and I from the Barcelona Podcast, which is currently in your ears right now. Thanks again for tuning in, and if you've got an iPhone, please subscribe via iTunes. If you've got an Android, it's Google Play, and of course, we're on Spotify, too. It's 5 stars, which would be great, and you can follow us on the show notes. Just go down in your show notes and give us a nice little review there. We're also on social media on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod or HiltonD13 for me, and on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. All that said, Francesc, what's going on today?
In episode 57 of the Barcelona Podcast, we're going to be covering many different topics. First, we're going to start with La Gran Pregunta, and we're going to cover which players should be sold, should be kept, or should be loaned out this January transfer window before it finishes. Then we're going to move on. I'm really, really excited about bringing an interview with my brother. I keep talking about him pretty much every week, and I managed to convince him to have an interview. His English is not the best, but then again, he really does try very hard. So I really do hope that that interview brings also value. He was in Barca's system for several years, and hopefully that is something that you're interested in listening today. And we're going to finish with a quick round of listener questions. The Barcelona Podcast 57 starts right here.
So let's start right there with La Gran Pregunta. Who should Barcelona sell, loan, keep, or January? And we've made a list of those players that you'd have to say are up for that kind of nomination, where, of course, Lionel Messi is not on the trading block right now, not on the transfer rumors. Neither is Luis Suarez, Gerard Piqué, Marc-André Ter Stegen, Umtiti. Well, you know the people who aren't going likely to be sold or loaned in January. So the ones we're talking about, starting with Arda Turan, who's the one done deal of all of these, a two-year loan to Metapol Basaksehir. 36 appearances, 5 goals since 2015. He signed with Vidal in that summer, of course, and had to wait until the transfer ban was over to play, and it's never worked out. The positives here, while it is just a loan for 2.5 years, the next 2.5 years, we should say, Barcelona can still sell him to any other club and gain a profit, with then Metapol Basaksehir getting a portion of that. And again, apologies to any of our Turkish listeners. If you think I've butchered Ousmane Dembele's name in the past, of course, you haven't seen me say Turkish names until just now. But finally, his wages are off the books, and that's the big story here. And for all the criticism we gave Arda Turan for not playing recently, it's just nice to finally have this one put to bed, Francesc.
Absolutely. I don't think I could be happier. I did say that for this transfer window, the priority was to offload Turan because the wage bill, as we mentioned on a previous podcast, which I really recommend, after you listen to this one, you tap on your show notes and you go back to listen to that because we covered a lot of very important topics there that you would be interested in. So in terms of Turan, the wage bill at Barca right now, 82% of the income for the year goes on players, and that's just unsustainable. Arda Turan, 2 million euros he's going to be getting from Basaksehir in the next 6 months, which is great. And then next year, the 4 million euros he was going to be paid, they're going to be paid by his new team as well, which is fantastic. You know, obviously, being able to sell him would be great. his new Turkish team is going to get either 20 or 25% of a future sale. So, you know, it's in our interest that Durant does really well in that team so that we can sell him on elsewhere and actually get some money back, not just saving his wage, but actually making some profit out of him. And if the Başakşehir team wins the Turkish league, we'll get 0.3 million euros, which is more than nothing. So all the best to Arda Turan in his new team. I am delighted that we don't have to worry about his wage anymore.
So with Arda Turan, that story pretty much just is done and dusted. Now we get to the guys still on the team that are, you'd have to say, on the chopping block. We start with, you'd say, the guy with the highest market valuation. And I also want to be very transparent that all of these market valuations are from transfermarkt.com. Of course, it's a German site, and they always have a pretty good idea. And again, this isn't an exact science to see what a player is worth, but these are just those valuations on whether or not their stock has gone up or down based on agents, based on what they could be sold with on an open market. Andre Gomes is who we start with, 40 appearances and 3 goals since 2016, and his valuation since joining Barcelona has gone down from 30 million euro to 22. Now, the one caveat with him, he is one of these players that Ernesto Valverde has recently come out and said, even at least behind closed doors, that he is trusted and that he will most likely not be sold, at least until the summer where the squad is reevaluated. So it looks like Francesc Gomes has a place at the club, though, and even though he might get the biggest transfer fee, it looks like it would have to wait for the summer.
Definitely, and also we can't forget that he's actually playing against Real Sociedad on the weekend. He actually played pretty much the whole game to the best of his ability. He didn't have his best, but to be honest, he's a player that Valverde's included in his rotation. He's in his favorite 16 players, you obviously have to say. Luis Enrique also saw something in him, and he's still young. He's got plenty of time to get better. I do realize that he can be infuriating at times because he doesn't always look interested. He's not the guy with the biggest personality at all, but I think that Valverde really values what he adds to the team, and in his eyes, I don't think he's going to sell him on. Me personally, anything around 35 million, which is what we paid for him at the start, would be enough to convince me to let go of him, but I really think he's going to be staying.
Well, speaking of guys in the plans, Paco Alcácer, at least before his injury a few weeks ago, was playing, was finally hitting his form. He's had 28 appearances and 8 goals since 2016. And his market valuation has gone from 25 to 18. But of course, he went from being a starter for Valencia and one of the most promising young Spanish forwards to being a bench player at Barcelona. But again, he's found his stride before his injury, and hopefully he can come back and do that. And while players usually aren't sold or loaned or anything like that while they're injured, that makes it even less likely that Paco Alcácer will see his way out during January. So, Frances, I say this is another one that you probably are not going to expect to see.
We're probably not going to sell him, no. But I would say if we sign him for 25 million, if I get 25 million in the bank right now and we can save his wage, then that is someone else that I would be more than happy to wave goodbye to. We've got Coutinho injured, coming back soon. We've got Dembélé now injured again for the next 3 weeks, which is not great. But, you know, in a month's time, they're both going to be healthy again. And I think between Coutinho, Dembélé, Suarez and Messi, they've got the upfront bit of the team sorted. And if anything else was needed, I think José Arnaiz from Barça B has proven his worth already. And I just don't see where Alcácer fits in the puzzle. So anything around 25 million euros for Alcácer, for me, it's a definite sell.
Let's go over two other guys that most likely won't be leaving. Denis Suarez, who we saw come on as a sub against Real Sociedad. 18 million euro valuation for that player, 37 appearances and 3 goals since 2016. And while you'd have to say, Frances, his stock has certainly lowered, particularly with the signings of Dembélé and Coutinho, and that's certainly going to slash into the minutes of Denis Suarez, and he may not find a place at the club over the summer, it still sounds like Ernesto Valverde wants him to be in that same realm of Andre Gomes, where he's one of those bench players, game in and game out, and can be relied on to come in.
But I would still sell him. I'm sorry, that probably sounded very negative today, but I think Denis Suarez has had more than enough time and he's been given plenty of opportunities to show his worth. And to be fully and totally honest, I know there's a lot of people that expect him to become the next Iniesta for some reason, but he's just not showing it. And he's not someone who is 20 or 21 years old. I think he's 25 years old now. And at 25, he really should be having a much bigger impact than what he's shown so far. So any offers around the 25 million euro mark, for me, it's a goer. I think if Gomes is not going to leave, then I think Suarez needs to. I think we can keep both of them. And based on Valverde's doing of late, I think Gomes is the one that's chosen to stay. And I don't really have that much hope that Denis Suarez is going to be offering what people expect of him. For me, someone else who needs to be sold. And please note that I'm not saying loaned out, because he's been loaned out and played for different teams in different occasions. I think what we need now is money in the bank and money off our wage bill.
Not to correct you, but Denis Suarez just turned 24, but still, the point is made. He is in his mid-20s. And, you know, I've defended him for a long time, but this is not even me saying it. The writing is certainly on the wall. With Coutinho coming in, Denis Suarez is never going to have the time on the field at Barcelona to reach any potential. And as you said, and I agreed with this, that there is no next Iniesta, that Denis Suarez wasn't going to be the next Iniesta, but him being a starter at Barcelona, it went at the beginning of the season to, we'll say, what, 20% that was going to happen, 30% that could happen, but now that's basically down to zero. And he's a player that, at least the way the squad is built under Valverde, and we'll talk about this at the end when we go through all the names, that I feel with Suarez that I think he's one that you revisit again over the summer to sell. And so I think now I'd say that, you know, he's a part of the squad and he adds depth when needed. You don't know who's going to get injured. And then over the summer, I'd say you reevaluate, and certainly he should be on the way out then as you try to reinforce the squad again in the center of the midfield in particular. So moving on to another guy that, again, I don't think he's going to be leaving this winter time. That's Jasper Cillessen. He's only got a 9 million euro valuation. Of course, he's a backup goalkeeper, only played 5 appearances this season. He's always pretty good when he gets out there. He's certainly one of the best backup keepers in all of Europe. You can tell he's a full international with the Netherlands. He's their number one. Even though they're not going to the World Cup, the Netherlands, of course, still a force in Europe, as well as being the number one for so many years for Ajax over in the Netherlands, obviously. And so Cillessen, I think, again, he's a guy that if he wants more playing time next season, probably sell him on over the summer and reinforce with another backup. But again, God forbid Marc-Andre Ter Stegen would get injured. What do you do then?
And that's the point. I think that having a second goalkeeper who is an international, who has pretty much done a fantastic job every single time he's been trusted. He's not complained to the media about not playing. Then again, he probably expected that, being behind Ter Stegen, who arguably is in the top 3 goalkeepers of the world right now. And I would say if Cillessen wants to stay, I'm more than happy to keep him. He's a team player, obviously making Ter Stegen better on a weekly basis during training. And I think as long as he wants to stay, I'm happy for him to stay here. Obviously, regular listeners know I'm a big fan of La Masia. You've got Ortola coming through the ranks quite strongly. So I think that maybe in the summer, if he decided to go, e.g. he did a fantastic end of season and he had some suitors by then it would be something that would make Barca earn some money. And if you trust La Masia players, that can only have a great effect moving forward. So I would say in this current transfer window, we keep Cillessen, or I would anyway.
Well, we are going to switch gears to a guy that is certainly gone, and we'll talk about his career again at a future time. But right now, we're just strictly talking about money coming in and money going out. So Javier Mascherano, more than 200 appearances for the club. And of course, with Yuri Mina now officially at Barcelona, he's officially a Barcelona player. It seems like Mascherano, having scored that one goal from the penalty spot in 2017 against Osasuna, he's going to take that one goal and head to China to most likely Hebei Fortune for the resounding sound of 10 million euro. So that's just, again, 10 million euro of money in the bank for a guy in his mid-30s who, as you say, he's not playing right now, so you'd want him to play. And I think whether or not he's playing, he's going to the World Cup for Argentina over the summer. But again, I think he just still wants to be in form and be prepared to make one final hurrah on the international stage. And again, he's been such a good servant for Barcelona, and I think we'll break down his career a little farther when this one goes official.
Yeah, and it is not official yet, and you know, I'm probably a bit too wary, but until I see the official confirmation from the fcbarcelona.com website, I don't tend to believe anything. Obviously, we just signed Yerry Mina, which I think is a good move. And that, in a way, says that Mascherano is definitely leaving. But it hasn't happened yet. If he does go to China for 10 million euros, having given all the service that you just explained, I think that's a good move as well. I would honestly, personally have kept him until the end of the year and sold him in the summer. But then again, we know the Chinese windows are different and the season in China starts now. So it's only fair that if that's where he wants to go and get his great big last contract, then we can do that. But at least we're making 10 million euros out of a player that would have probably left on a free in the summer. So good move in a way, although I'm really sad about it.
Rafinha, 48 appearances and 8 goals since 2011. He had a successful loan to Celta de Vigo in the 2013-14 season, and his current market valuation is 15 million euros. Now, of all the guys here to leave in January, as the final one we'll talk about too, I guess we'll do this in tandem with Gerard Deulofeu, 9 appearances, 1 goal this season, who's gone from 12 million euro to 14 million euro valuation. Those two guys are the most likely to leave, Frances, and the reason I do them in tandem is that they were both guys that were brought up through the system, but for Deulofeu, it's been both injuries and just not seemingly able to play the way Barcelona need to play and not being that high class of player that Barcelona desire to win games game in and game out. And Rafinha on the other side, just hard luck done by injuries. And even though he's gotten the medical green light, he's still not in the squad. So it seems like the writing is on the wall that Rafinha will be leaving the club most likely this winter. Again, what, 80%, 90% chance that he'll be heading out. And Rafinha has been, again, such a good servant. He's still in his early 20s as well, so he does have some more time to try to reach his potential. But he's certainly a guy I think that on off the bench, at least, Frances, while center midfield is seemingly so deep now that Coutinho has signed, I think Rafinha, that's one that hurts, and you wish that he could have turned into a better player than he wound up being. Just, and again, not on any fault of the talent he has, but just because of the injuries that were hard done by. But I think not to take words out of your mouth here, but in the case of Rafinha, while I'd love to loan him because you don't want to lose a player that has the high ceiling that he does, Barcelona do kind of need the money. So I think you do have to wind up selling on Rafinha, which again is something that I don't like, but I think is a necessary evil.
I agree. I think both players, we wish them all the best and we're happy that they've gone through our ranks. Obviously, both Rafinha and Deulofeu, they've been playing for different teams throughout their careers. Obviously, Rafinha in terms of Celta and Deulofeu in terms of Milan, Everton, and even Sevilla at some point. I would be very unhappy that they are leaving because I would have liked them to realize the dreams of succeeding at the Camp Nou. But unfortunately, given the way the team is going, I mean, we're unbeaten. We are 19 points ahead of Madrid, 9 points ahead of Atletico Madrid, 11 points ahead of Valencia. You know, you've got a first 11 that doesn't include Dembélé or Coutinho. You've got Sergio Roberto or Semedo. One of them doesn't really start. You know, if you're going to be winning trophies this season with 16, 15 players that don't include either one of those two, then they're surplus to requirements and they have to go. I think that Rafinha is very likely to go to Inter Milan. It's been reported in the Catalan media that there is an offer of loan for the rest of the season, and then Inter actually wants a buyout clause. So, you know, for them to be buying the player at the end of the loan for 20 million, and Barca is actually saying they want 25 for him. But that is pretty much done. In terms of Deulofeu, I know there are several teams from Italy that are chasing his services. I think if we can get 15 million euros for him, that would be great. Quite likely Napoli is going to be the destination, but it could even go back to Milan, and that changes on a daily basis. Let's just see where we are at the end of the transfer window, but I think both players have their days counted at the Camp Nou.
And looking, I think to wrap this all up, Frances, looking at the names that are viable to be leaving the club, I think there's a lesson to be learned here, and the Sky Sports guys actually talked about this on the La Liga Weekly podcast, and the lesson here is that the bench really should be filled out. And again, this has been the policy that our podcast has spoken about many, many times, that you have to spend money. If you're going to be a Barcelona, a Bayern Munich, a Real Madrid, if you're going to be one of those top 5 to 10 teams in the world, you have to spend now major money on the transfer market to bring in some of the best players in the world for your starting 11. But that said, I think Barcelona have learned that Andre Gomes, if he's not going to be an instant starter, you can't really spend 35, 40 million euro on a bench player. It's just the market won't allow it anymore. And so that's where Barcelona has got to either do what Bayern Munich did, where they loan a player like James Rodriguez from Real Madrid, and he's been obviously on a, I think it's an $8 million per year loan, which is fantastic for Bayern Munich, at least this season. You either do it that way, or more likely, that's where you rely on your academy, because they're just spending too much money on the bench for guys like a Lucas Digne, who maybe, I know that Cucurella wasn't ready, but again, maybe you throw one of your left backs. I think Moises is currently training with the first team sometimes and doesn't even feature for Barcelona B, but there has to be those guys maybe in on at Celta, or not to say Celta is a lesser team, but either on Leganés or Celta or Eibar, there's got to be left backs or right backs or somebody to help supplement your bench that you can get for less than $10 million when, for the rare occasion that Jordi Alba isn't going to get a start. And again, you also have to rely on your academy. When Sergi Palencia, the right back, is ready to go, I think Semedo was a great buy for your starting 11. That makes sense. But if Sergi Roberto moves back into the center midfield, we don't need to spend 20 to 30 more million euro on a backup right back behind Semedo. You would just have Sergi Palencia be filling in on the bench. And I think that makes total sense to me. And I think that's what Barcelona have to at least learn from all of this now.
That is the policy that I advocate for as well. I think, you know, you've got Alanya, Arnaiz definitely should be first teamers next year. And then, because Alanya is incredibly talented, but he hasn't even sort of gotten into the team for the Copa del Rey, simply because you've got people like Andre Gomes, you've got people like Dennis, you've got people like, he's injured now, but it would have been Rafinha ahead of him. And you need to have that tiny, even if it's tiny, that tiny little window of time that you can give to La Masia prospects so that they continue to grow. Because without that policy, we wouldn't have had any Busquets. We wouldn't have had any Pedro, for example. They were not players that were excelling at Barça B at the time. Obviously, they've gone on to be internationals, and in Busquets, particularly in Busquets' case, a Barça legend already. But they weren't really excelling or being anything incredibly special at Barça B, but it was only because they were trusted and given the chance at first team level that they went on to excel. And I think that's something that Cucurella, Palencia, Alanya and Arnaiz definitely have a chance of doing in the future. But if we've got this sort of second layer of expensive players that never really add anything much, earning that much money, then you have to play them. So I think that next summer should be sort of a total reset, a total rethink of where we're going. We just spent incredible amounts of money on signing Coutinho and Dembélé. That's 300 million altogether. And I think our huge spending should pretty much end there and trust La Masia from now on to get players that are squad players that could eventually become starters themselves.
Now, with La Gran Pregunta answered, before we get to La Bolsa, we just want to make note that you've been missing La Bolsa a few weeks, Frances, now, and El Kiosco has been in and out of our show rundown as well for those fans of those segments. And Frances, we do have a little podcast announcement related to those things.
We do have an announcement. First and most importantly, my baby girl is doing okay. She's now around 11 weeks, I believe. She cries at night and I don't sleep very much. But for all the parents that are listening to this podcast now, I'm sure you feel my pain. But basically, we're now in a position in which we're ready to do our second show. However, we just don't have the funds for that, because when you host a podcast, you need to pay hosting fee every month, and we just don't have enough money to fund that. So we've got a challenge for you. If we can reach a goal of $100 per month on Patreon, then our second show will be back. At the moment, we're making, I think it's $48 a month, and we're incredibly grateful to all our patrons that support us. But basically, if we can raise the other $52, that would help us with the cost of promotion in terms of social media, and also it would help us with the cost of hosting the podcast. We've got a lot of ideas for new content. We would promise to bring two shows of no less than 40 minutes each week. And basically, we really just don't have enough funds for that promotion and the hosting. If you go to tbpod.link/Patreon, that is P-A-T-R-E-O-N, or basically just tap on your iPhone or your device now and just go into the show notes. On the first line, it says support on Patreon. You could go there to check out, basically, if you want to contribute. You can start from $3, you can go as high as, I think it's 10 that you can contribute, but you know, just if you can give what you can to bring the show back, that would be good. We would bring back the five-star players of the week. I know that everyone that has been feeding back really enjoyed that section. We would do interviews. It would be longer interviews, and we'll be able to bring an interview every single week. We will have the listener questions. We feel like sometimes we run out of time, and we will be able to give more comprehensive answers. We'll actually be able to have even more questions on the show as well. And basically, we've got a couple more surprises ready for you. But then again, we need to reach our goal of at least $100 per month on Patreon. We're currently at 48. So if you could support us towards reaching our goal of $100, that would be great. That's tbpod.link/Patreon, or just tap on your device now, go to the show notes and just go to support on Patreon. If you are going to support us, we really want to thank you in advance, and literally we couldn't do the show without you. If you choose to not support us, then we won't hold it against you, and we love you anyway. But see if we can reach our goal together. Right, so as I said at the start of the show, this is the interview with my brother, Sergio Navarro, and I really do hope you enjoy it. It's an insight into the life of someone who played for Barca for a little while in his career, and all the memories that that brought in terms of pressure, in terms of family, and in terms of moving forward. Enjoy! Right, so I'm honored to be joined by my brother. Listeners to the podcast may have realized that I keep talking about it all the time. And he came over to visit from Barcelona this weekend, and he's agreed to have an interview with me, although we've spoken to each other for over 30 years. Sergio, how are you today?
Yeah, fine.
Good. So as listeners know, Sergio used to play for the Barça Youth Systems for, I think it was a year and a half when he was younger, and he was teammates with Andrés Iniesta and many other players that went on to have a great career, as he did. So today he's going to tell us all about it. So, Sergio, what is it like to play for Barça when you're younger?
Well, it's a good moment for all the people that they know you, and it's
a privilege.
It's a privilege to play for the team that you have in your heart.
Okay. So did the other players in the team make it easy for you?
Well, it's not too much, because there's a lot of competitive and lot of players. Everybody wants to play for Barça, so it's not so easy.
Okay, how about the coaches, the managers?
Well, the managers, I don't remember so much in the managers, because they always was depending of the great players that were there, and the rest of the players that we were there, so we have to try to play as better as we can.
Okay, so you had lots of memories there. What is your favorite moment, your favorite memory during your time at Barca when you were playing for the youth system?
My favorite moment is when we play the Canal Plus tournament. That was in 1996 in Madrid, that we play an international tournament against Madrid, Milan, and other European teams, Everton, I remember, in England,
yeah.
Benfica. Was a great moment.
Okay, why was it that great? Why do you remember it so fondly?
Because 20 years ago, we didn't have so recorded matches, and these kind of tournaments were the first that they were in television, and there were more publicity and diaries and all of these media.
Okay, so while you were playing in Madrid, how was your family? I mean, I was part of your family and still am, obviously, but how did your family react? Did we put any more pressure on you? Did you feel that we were supportive? What was your thinking?
Yeah, I feel that it was supportive, because they traveled to Madrid and they were with me all the time and in every match, and it was a good moment.
Okay, so playing for Barca, obviously everyone in school knew you played for them. Everyone in the football team obviously did. People that you played with before, teammates, also knew that you were sort of hitting the big time playing for Barca. So How did that make you feel? Did you have any privileges? Did you have anything that you could do because you were a Barca player? Did they give you any money to play for them? Did they give you anything like that? Any free tickets, anything like that?
Yeah, playing for Barca, they give you some privilege, like free entrance to the stadium, to see every match with another invitation or entrance for a partner or family. Also, we have a small salary and for kids, because we were kids.
We were kids.
13, 14 years old, to have your first salary is something to remember.
Yeah, it was. I was lucky to go with you to a lot of the games in the Camp Nou. Is there any you remember?
Yeah, I remember because the year that I will play for Barca was the year of Ronaldo Nazario, and I remember the match against Valencia, mm-hmm. that he made a hat-trick, and it was beautiful to see all the season there.
Yeah, good. So do you remember how we used to get into the Camp Nou? Because obviously we had the invitations, but our tickets were for the third tier all the way, basically at the very top of the Camp Nou. But I think we watched two games up there, and every other game we were close to the grass at the front. Can you tell our listeners what we did?
Well, my brother seems to be me, and I get into the stadium as the little brother that doesn't know how to speak or how to do in there. So really my brother was who played for Barca.
Yeah, so I pretended to be you, basically.
Yeah.
And we were very, very sneaky, and you always went in with some grandpa that was basically putting you in. And we had our seats, didn't we? We had two given, so I don't know if you remember. We had the same two seats every game for the season. And then against Real Madrid, the people who actually paid for the seats came and they kicked us out. And we had to sit on the stairs.
And we had to change places or sit down in the stairs.
Exactly. So is there anything you would change about your time at Barca?
I don't know. I will change the time to enjoy part of the sport, instead of only thinking about if I'm going to play more minutes or less minutes. This is one thing that I would change, I changed in the past.
Okay, so do you think you got to Barca too early? You were not old enough, or...?
Maybe yes, because there's a long time since you get into the club, and there is maybe 7-8 years that you have to be there until you get professional. So maybe it's too much years to stay in a club that is in a country level is the first one,
mm-hmm.
and in European levels they pick up kind of players in other teams, and it's very difficult because from 1 year to the next year maybe are 5-6 players that continue, or the rest are renewed.
Yeah, they're very demanding with the amount of people that they keep, and they're very, in a way, heartless with the children. They don't really think too much about what's behind them. It's just they just want to get the best players every single year, and sometimes two players that are at the same level, they have to make the choice, isn't it? So would you say you enjoyed being at Barca then? Were you happy then?
Well, I can say I played for Barca. Happy, I don't remember that year and a half a happy time. It's good because that year I made something big, but I don't remember of enjoying the match or the games as I did the rest of the years. I play not for Barca, for other teams.
Okay, we're gonna get to that in a minute, but how did you feel when Barca said you were not needed anymore?
Well, I was 14 and it was it was hard to think about it because you have in your mind that it's the only possibility to get professional. And when you are playing for Barca, you think that you are going to be professional, or you are maybe not playing for Barca, but for another teams that are in first division. And when they release you, so it's a bad moment. I remember I cried in the car, going home, and well, I remember that.
Yeah, but then you had a really good career after.
Well,
what happened next? What did you do after?
I went to another. Well, to Granollers is a city of 1,500 people, and I played there for 6-7 years, and I have been playing then in amateur football,
mm-hmm.
in the third division in Spain, and also second division,
mm-hmm.
for 1 year, and I enjoy these years I have played in Catalonia.
Okay, so out of all the years you played after, which was a lot of them, which was your favorite year? Because you played in Granollers and you got promoted there.
Yeah.
While you were playing at youth level in Granollers, you were captain a lot of the times. I remember you beat Barca 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going in the train to watch you play that day, and Iniesta was defeated 4-0, which was enjoyable for us at the time. I remember you went to Gavà and you played in Segunda División B, and you played in Tercera División for many, many years and seasons as well. So out of all of them, which one was your favorite moment? Lots to pick from.
I think the favorite moment is when I was 18. I played in Granollers, and that year we play against Mallorca, Valencia, and Barça, Espanyol, that were first division teams. And I remember that year because it was the year that seems to be much more professional than the other years that are in that you are playing in your region, and maybe 100 kilometers around, but you are not traveling with plane or train. And that year, I remember that was because you are playing, for example, Villarreal, Levante, mm-hmm. where other teams in Spain.
Okay, so that's very telling. Obviously, you have been offered managerial positions now. There are people that really just want to snap you up because you retired recently. Let me ask you about that first. How come that you've retired now? Because you've been fantastic for so many years. What's happened?
Well, maybe I have a daughter of 5 years old, and next year I'm going to get married with my wife, and maybe this is what the time of every day is difficult. So because the trainings are in the afternoon. So maybe falta de tiempo,
lack of time,
so makes me to get this decision.
Yeah, but you've done a lot in your career, and your current manager, well, the manager that you basically just ditched and a month ago, didn't want you to go, and he wants to get you back as a manager. So looking back at, because you worked for tens and even hundreds of coaches and managers and assistant coaches and all sorts, who is the one manager that you really remember very fondly, and what did that manager do to help you develop? One manager.
I don't know. One manager. Well, I remember one manager in Granollers, that was Galera. He's playing us very well the way to play similar that Barça play. And maybe that manager,
okay.
Is the one that I remember.
So do you think playing like Barca play is the right way to play? So if you became a manager, say tomorrow, would you try and play the Barca way, or would you change it? Would you be defensive?
Well, I think that Barca, Barca kind of game of playing can do it because it has very, very good players and much more better players than the other team. So if you have much more, see, you have players that are much better than the other ones, you can play like this style of Barca is playing now. If you don't have, or there's not so different between the teams, you have to try to play another kind of systems.
Okay, so do you think that's why Valverde is changing the Barca style this season then?
I don't think so. I think that this style will not change if the players are playing for long seasons for a long time in Barca are not changed until they Piqué, Iniesta, Busquets, until they were not these kind of players play there, and the system will be very, very similar.
Okay, so last question then. Do you think Barca are going to win the treble this season, el triplete?
I don't know. I think so. I hope Barca win this three competitions. It will not be easy because Madrid now in the season maybe that is waiting for something, and maybe in February until the end of the season of sure she will be awake, and maybe champions or another competition would be very competitive.
Okay, all right. I hope that they don't wake up. I hope that they continue sleeping for the whole season. And you were right in your prediction when you said, yes, there is no reason to think that we wouldn't win. Sergio, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Yeah, I love you lots. And I really do hope you got a nice flight back. And when you get to Barcelona, you'll be able to hear this interview online. I'll show you how to find a podcast on your iPhone as well, because you don't even know that. But yeah, it's great to look back at your career, and it's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Right, I really do hope you enjoyed the interview. Thank you so much to my brother. He is very good, isn't he?
Let's move to the voice of the people, or La Ronda de Preguntas, the quickfire listener questions. First, before we get to the questions, a little update on Barcelona B. Without a suspended Carlos Alenia, a 1-0 loss to Real Valladolid, outshooting them 11-6 at home, and also playing in what would be described as a 3-4-1-2 or a 3-5-2 without the suspended Alenia. Now, obviously, they are still in the relegation zone, now 4 points below the line in a dangerous spot in the Segunda Division, but they did make two signings, a loan deal for Christian Rivera from Eibar and Martin Hangla from Granada, a promising defensive midfielder and center back respectively, who will hopefully help the squad turn things around. So they're in a bad spot, but Barcelona Femení on the opposite side in a really good spot. 2-0 winners over Real Zaragoza, goals by Victoria Losada and Andresa Alves, which means that nothing has changed atop the table. They're still in first, tied with Atletico Madrid. And the other thing about Barcelona Femení this week, there's a really good interview with Lecky Martins this week by Natalie Arroyo. You can find that on her Twitter, Nat Arroyo. And that interview is in English. So that's actually why I'm making reference to that interview in particular. It's English. Again, that's at Nat Arroyo. And that's, of course, with Martins, who is probably one of the top three most prolific women's players in the world right now. So let's get to the questions now that we've gotten done with the Barça B and Barça Femení update. Starting with the Peña Barcelona of Los Angeles. A lot of criticism for EV before the game for the lineup, and of course that against Real Sociedad. How much trust should we put in him? How responsible is he for our success this season with the lineups and game plans versus the players being in great form? And that's a really good question by the Peña Barcelona of Los Angeles. My take on EV is that he has my utmost trust, Frances. My thought throughout that Real Sociedad game the whole time, especially in the first half even, was that Barcelona are trailing 2-0. They're not playing well at all. And yet if any team could wind up overtaking Real Sociedad and beating them at home for the first time since 1930, as in coming back and winning. They haven't done that since 1930, have Barcelona at Real Sociedad. It would be this current squad, and they did exactly that.
Put it this way, that game would have been a loss last year. When you're 2-0 down, rainy, horrendous pitch conditions, January, that's a loss. With Luis Enrique last year, the team just didn't have it in them to come back. But I think they had that grit and determination to turn things around. I think the goal that Paulinho scored right before halftime really did help. Going to halftime with a 2-1 gave our team a sort of a glimmer of hope. I'm not quite sure what Valverde said at halftime. And Jordi Alba, I was listening to the interview on Catalan radio, and he said, I'm not going to tell you what he said, but we all came back stronger and sort of we went on for the win. And it basically is one, the win in Real Sociedad in Anoeta is one of those victories that actually mean potentially a league crown. I'm very pleased with the result.
JDH asks, if we actually have any money at this point, do we think any additional incoming transfer business is required, given how we're playing? Example, Arthur.
In short, no. I think that we are covered. All we need to do now is offload players that are getting paid too much money for not playing very much or very well. And with Coutinho and Dembélé, hopefully they can both get healthy soon. And then that's the way forward. I would say definitely not.
And that answers Brian Nanaya's question, is Barca getting Goretzka or Arthur this January? And the answer to that is resounding no. I'd say it's about 99% sure that neither of those two players are going to be showing up at the Camp Nou this January. Now, Arthur, a player that could show up in the summer, who knows, but again, not in January. Rehan asks, should we consider keeping Vidal and Rafinha for these window by looking at our busy schedule in January to March? And that's a good point. That kind of goes off of what we talked about in La Gran Pregunta, is that with all of the games, because again, Barca's still in the Copa, Champions League and everything, we worry if there's enough minutes, but the question is there enough ability to rest Messi, Suarez, Umtiti, Alba, Iniesta? And I would say, I think, again, looking at the rotation, especially when Coutinho and Dembele are fit and with Mina now being added to everything, I think there will be enough players.
And also, how much weight do we put in La Copa? Because that's one of the downfalls from last season. Our players were fried by the time March came, because Luis Enrique used to just trust his 11 players, and there was probably a couple of subs that were coming in and out, such as Sergio Roberto, etc. I don't really mind not winning La Copa this year. What I really would mind is our players to be disastrously tired for the Champions League and La Liga. Obviously, with the lead we got in La Liga, I think we could administer that with the players that we currently have. I think Champions League, that needs to be the best 11 playing, minus Coutinho, because obviously he's ineligible. But for La Copa, I'm not really too bothered. I think that games like that, you can have Arnaiz playing, you can have Alanya playing, you can have, if they're still with us, Denis Suarez, Gomez, and players like that. And that I would be fine with that. I think Valverde will be clever with the amount of time he's given, and he's very analytical in that sense. And I think that the players that don't start Champions League matches should not really feature in La Copa.
All right, speeding up a little bit, Rai asks, does Denis really a Barcelona player in the long run? Does he have the potential? And that answer, I think we already answered, is that he has the potential to be a Barcelona bench player, but I severely don't believe that he has the potential to be a Barcelona instant starter, particularly now that Coutinho and Dembele are in the side. Lekule Chingona asks, what do you guys think about Vermaelen's form so far? Will it be tough for Umtiti to get back in that starting 11?
I want to say Lekule Chingona is one of the best Twitter handles I've ever heard. So congratulations on your choice. Vermaelen has been excellent. I think that he literally has been very surprising in terms of the way that he's remained healthy. That for a start, and then obviously he always had the quality, and but with his confidence in terms of his body and in terms of his ability to show what he can do, that's helped him to be an integral part of the team. And to be honest, I think Yerry Mina is going to have to be very good and adapt really quickly to become the third centre back, because I think that third centre back seems quite cemented with Vermaelen right now.
Ricky C. asked, how soon should we start using Roberto in the midfield, or would you continue using Sergio Roberto in the back line? And I think it doesn't matter what Frances and I think. I think Ernesto Valverde believes that he's a right back, at least for this squad, and he's been good there, so I don't think you're going to see anything change.
Also, don't forget that Sergio Roberto has already given 6 goal assists this season, with his preferred destination being Luis Suarez. And obviously Jordi Alba is getting a lot of recognition for what he brings to the team and his connection with Messi. Everyone's celebrating, and obviously we are as well. But Jordi Alba has given 6 goal assists as well. So Sergio Roberto and Alba are in 6 goal assists each, given the fact that as fullbacks at Barca, they're given the whole trust to move forward as much as they want and as often as they want as well. And because of that, it's hard to argue that Semedo is going to find it hard to get in the team, because Roberto is excelling so much in the attacking front. I personally think Semedo should be the right back and Sergio Roberto move to the middle, but I don't think that's what Valverde's got in mind right now.
All right, super speed at this point, we're running out of time. Arsacio asks, how do we fight against this high-pressure tactic that Real Sociedad did so well? And I think the answer to that is you saw Paulinho in the starting lineup, and for teams, particularly in the Champions League and those top teams, Paulinho worked to great effect against Real Madrid, and I think Ernesto Valverde is going to have to take chances with his starting 11, and if Paulinho falls out of form, and not goal-scoring form, I think, again, he's in goal-scoring form, but his control over the midfield might not be exactly what Barcelona might need against high-pressure tactics against the likes of Real Betis or Real Sociedad. So maybe that's where you see Iniesta getting rotated in. Coutinho, I think, is a player who would do well against that. So I think the answer to that.
Another key point to consider is that the current Barca, Valverde's Barca, is actually quite comfortable defending. In terms of Guardiola, Villanova, definitely Tata Martino, and the predecessors, particularly Luis Enrique, that's not something that we were very comfortable doing. But the way that the players understand the game now, they're more than happy to run and wait behind the ball, closing spaces. And I think that it would be a way to hit on the counter and be more effective. And that has proven successful so far. And I think Valverde is going to stick to that plan.
Kule asked, Gomes, why? What does he add to the squad that we don't already have?
He adds a degree of physicality, control, and that's what Valverde has seen, that's what Luis Enrique used to see, and that's probably why he's not going to be sold, despite getting so much criticism from the fan base. I'm not the biggest fan myself, but I think that's what the coaches are seeing in him.
All right, I've got some easy layups. Menyo asked, does it smell like a treble? I'd say not yet.
Not yet, no. It does smell like La Liga is in the bag, but obviously 19 more games to play, it's too early to call it. Champions League can be a lottery, because, you know, you got one bad game and you're out. I mean, I see the chances of us having a terrible game, like a 4-0 defeat away, touch wood, touching the table right now. I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know. And then La Copa, honestly, I'm not necessarily worried about that. If that is the correct answer to the question, then that's that.
Bullseye asks, how do you compare Valverde's first season at this stage with Guardiola's?
Well, the first part of La Liga, Guardiola had one of the seasons that was better, but then Valverde is still unbeaten and he's on the top 3 of the best first rounds of La Liga the club has ever had. And from that perspective, it's a positive. I think beyond that is that the team seems much more solid. It's much more confident and much more eager to make things happen from a position of defensive consistency.
Gashi asks, how do we integrate Dembele in the best possible way, and do you think he'll be a success? And unfortunately, the answer is we don't have to worry about that for a few more weeks, but obviously he's 20 years old. I think he's going to be a resounding success. Moving over to Facebook, Abdul asks, finally Coutinho can join Barcelona, but what does that mean for Rakitic? And I think he's a guy that Frances is going to see his minutes cut into, but he plays a different position now. He plays a different role. He's playing much more defensive this year, so I don't think it's going to be Coutinho like-for-like taking Rakitic's minutes.
No, absolutely not. I see Coutinho's inclusion having virtually no effect on Rakitic's time, because as Dan just explained, he adds something different to what Coutinho will bring. I think Coutinho is coming for the Iniesta space at the moment. If you look back at the Real Sociedad game of the weekend, there were between Paulinho in one wing, so it wasn't a wing, but it was the sort of the furthest space to the right and the left of the midfield. and Gomes at that, in that game as well. So I don't really see Rakitic coming out of the team for Coutinho to come in.
Final question from Instagram. Majdin Zrala asks, what are your thoughts on Sergio Roberto's season? And to that, we've talked about it. I think not only has he improved himself defensively, and by the smallest margin, I think when he started right back, he wasn't necessarily an instant starter at that position, but he's been at least good enough at the right back spot. Because even against Real Sociedad, they were attacking the left side against Andre Gomes and Jordi Alba. And you have to say Jordi Alba is one of the best left backs in the world right now, at least on the attacking end of things. And Sergio Roberto has just held down that right side of the field all year long so far.
There are not many culés out there right now who doubt that Sergio Roberto is a first-team player. I think the debate now is whether he should start as a right-back or further up the pitch, and that is credit to his progression. I'm delighted to say that he's finally arrived this season, and yeah, hopefully he stays with us for years to come, having an even greater impact moving forward.
Well, unfortunately, as you've heard, we didn't get to all the questions today, and if we didn't get to your question, again, we refer you back to the announcement Frances made about going on our Patreon, helping out so we can make a second show, where if we're able to make a second show, we guarantee that all questions will be answered at that point. So again, apologies if we didn't get to yours, but this wraps up another show of the Barcelona Podcast, bringing the hottest breaking stories from the Camp Nou. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Força Barça.
Força.